Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman, and I'm here with you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. In recent weeks on this show, we've been discussing the role of targeted nutrient therapy in treating and preventing chronic illness and accelerated aging. One of the most common complaints I hear from people about Western medicine is the lack of training that doctors and even dietitians have in nutrition. There have always been a few doctors and researchers who have been brave enough to break out of the traditional mold of treatment to examine the way we can use the components we have innately within our bodies to optimize our resistance to disease. Research dates back into certainly as far back as the 50s that highlights the destructive effects caused by vitamin deficiencies, also deficiencies of minerals and fatty acids, and the remarkable effects of replacing them and addressing the mechanisms that caused their depletion. I'm joined today by one of the pioneers in the use of orthomolecular health medicine within an orthodox medical practice, San Francisco physician, Dr. Richard Koonin. Are you with us, Richard?
Indeed I am.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi. Let me give you your due. A leader in clinical molecular medicine for over 30 years, Dr. Koonin was educated in Minnesota and did a residency in psychiatry at Cornell Medical College in New York City. In the early 60s, he received an NIH special fellow in neurophysiology at Stanford University, and he remained in the Bay Area to start his practice, his private practice here in San Francisco. He is founder of the Society for Orthomolecular Health Medicine. So we're very honored to have you here, one of the good guys.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so let's start by having you explain what you mean by orthomolecular health medicine.
Well, the key association with orthomolecular by now ought to be Dr. Linus Pauling. Younger listeners may have already lost track of Pauling, but particularly those over 40 or 45 will remember their chemistry in college and remember the vitamin C controversies of the 1970s. Well, I realize that Pauling was the medical hero who stepped forward and said vitamin C is an important element of about just about everything in health. And he wrote books about vitamin C in the common cold, vitamin C in cancer, and more recently got into vitamin C and heart disease. At that time, he was well in his late 80s. In fact, died at the age of 94 5 years ago. So he lived his philosophy and was himself rewarded by it. So orthomolecular was his word. Pauling gave us the word orthomolecular to symbolize, in the scientific way, the idea of nutrition. And so that's the slogan of the Orthomolecular Society today, is putting nutrition first in health and in medicine.
You know, it's I was trying to figure out a best way to get into this for people to understand the complexity of this and why it's so important. And one of the things I always try to get listeners to understand is the principle of a cascade in the body. The idea that when something is ingested or absorbed into our bodies, it can cause a domino effect. What does the body do with vitamins when we take them? What happens that is both beneficial and also can sort of hose things up if it's not functioning right?
Well, of course, the first thing you do with vitamins is eat them, which means they go into our bodies. And for most of us, that's, including myself, for a long time, I really thought after that, everything was automatic.
That's right.
But it turns out that beyond absorbing, vitamins have to be digested, just like any food. After all, vitamins are food. And they must be absorbed. And very often that Mother Nature is very clever and has evolved little transport mechanisms for getting vitamins and minerals across the intestinal epithelium and into the blood vessels in a way that is regulated so that you get traffic control, so to speak, on a chemical level, on a cellular level. And so there is not only digestion, but then there's absorption. And gosh, by now, you know, there's a lot that can go wrong. We know people who have malabsorption. Ask anybody who's had irritable bowel or intestinal problems or intolerance for wheat or milk or various foods or even certain kinds of fruits, the so-called disaccharide problem. And then you get into beyond the eating and digesting and the absorbing, you've got to then transport the nutrients in the blood and lymph to the tissues. Because if the nutrients don't reach the cells don't work very well. In fact, and then after that, what works in the cell is what's called metabolism. Or, plain English, the physiology and the chemistry of life. The master plan, the part that we are just beginning to get the idea that maybe we understand it a little, at least enough to play around with genes and things like that. So those steps are all a part of orthomolecular thinking. You can't just take it for granted from the point of view of a doctor or a health professional that your patient's going to eat good food or eat good vitamins and that they're going to actually end up at the cell in an optimal amount and finding a cell that's best prepared to use.
Yeah, so there are things that can get in the way of this absorption. And another thing that people get confused about, there's this double-edged thing. One is the people, like you said, who say, well, why can't I just, you know, which we just answered, why can't I just get it from food? And then the other one is I have a girlfriend whose son is very, very bright, and he said, Mom, look at this package of Skittle candies. It lists that it has half the total amount of vitamin C that you need for a day, so why can't I just eat Skittles? And she said, Lena, can you tell me what to say to him? And what I said is there are enzymes and coenzymes and things that are in foods that enable you to utilize the vitamins in foods. And if you eat them in this purified, rare, you know, sort of refined way, these things will just be either rob your body of it as it tries to get them from somewhere else, or it just simply won't digest the food. So there are all these other...
But robbing usually means that cells have to break down to release their nutrient load into a general purpose. And to some extent, that can be regenerated, to another extent, cannot. In other words, we wear out. For example, if you have an illness and you're vitamin A deficient, your adrenal glands, which are called to accommodate illness and make an adaptation, are supposed to produce various hormones, everything from adrenaline right on to the various cortisone-like substances. Without vitamin C, vitamin A, pantothenic acid in adequate amounts, but particularly vitamin A, and that's people don't know this very well, the adrenal will atrophy, and in fact you lose function, even after you, if you do luckily survive an illness in the face of a vitamin deficiency, the function of the gland, let's say in this case, may never come back to its full level of function.
Right.
And so what you have then is an adrenal deficiency forever after. You have to think of this for people that have severe malnutrition that are high stress, like in a concentration camp.
Or living in our current society, which is at times very much like a concentration camp for certain groups.
But also, to some extent, you see in our society right now, there's a lot of vitamin A deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are not eating vitamin A sources. The body can't make it, you know. It's a vitamin.
Right.
A vitamin, by definition,
right,
is something you have to eat. Your body can't make it. And I might go on to say a very important thing that people lose track of. If you don't get a single vitamin, any one of the 50 biggies, you know, the big ones, the vitamins, the ones you got to have, if you don't get even one, you die.
Right.
And but before you die, you get sick.
That's right.
And before you get sick, you don't feel very good.
I have to applaud you because you're explaining this in a very complete way that's accessible to people. So thank you for this.
Well,
I knew
yes,
you'd do this.
Called lesson one, and you know the professional oftentimes forget that. You got to explain that. That's why this is so important. This is vital.
I know it is. It's wonderful the way you just said it, though.
Well,
and then you have
widely known.
No, I know. I know.
You can destroy your adrenal glands.
Among other things.
Yeah.
Among other things. Now, you know, using vitamin A as an example, then we've got these situations where something happens to people. I mean, what we're doing now is we're talking about why the vitamins are important and why you can't always absorb them. And that leads us to this issue of how people get sick, why they get sick, and what happens that changes their capacity, you know, that gives them these deficiencies in the first place. So one thing that fits in with this is we talked about hepatitis C last week. We had Robert Crayon, the nutritionist, on, who I know you know. And he was talking about the fact that in some Hep C cases, you don't want to give them too much vitamin A.
Well, that's very correct.
So then you've got this kind of subtle when to thing. And that. So let me back up a little bit and ask you this. Do you believe that we are born with genetic predispositions or weaknesses, or that we are damaged by stress and the environment? What do you think is the trigger here? What happens to us?
I love the way you put the question. And, of course, it's not an either-or, it's both.
That's what I thought.
It's genes plus a low protein or a low calorie or a low anything diet to some extent. Maybe the way vitamins were first discovered is they were growth factors, and you measured an essentiality of a vitamin by dint of the fact whether an animal would grow with it and stop growing without it.
Yeah.
And so these are the little white rat deals, you know, where where graduate students and researchers spent a lot of time and effort to spell this out. But then you got to a case of something like vitamin E, where it didn't affect growth; it was something more profound. Vitamin E affected fertility. And so that's why they called it tocopherol, from the Greek word to bear fruit, to be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Without the vitamin E, these fragile membranes of sperms and ova would be disrupted and they couldn't function to make the make love and make babies.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was so subtle that until literally 80-something, vitamin E was called a vitamin in search of a disease. Doctors, the mental set of the medical mind was, it wasn't a disease to be infertile. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's the way it was. And then we discovered vitamin E was an antioxidant. I mean, it was known all along, but that the antioxidant was a part of physiology that was vital to survival. That wasn't recognized literally until Pearson and Shaw came along in 1980-81 and popularized it. Although they didn't do the basic research work, they made, like you say, they were able to popularize it, make people understand that it was truly important to see medicine and health as physiology, the workings of the cells, the workings of that inner life force that is ultimately physical chemical.
Just to remind people, the antioxidants, we went over this last week a bit, are the ones that donate electrons when we're exposed to nasty things in the environment that cause us to have these free radicals that are like Pac-Men that steal electrons and damage the cells. The antioxidants donate electrons.
Well, that's right. And that's where in nutrition, circulation gets into the picture, because circulation ultimately represents itself as a well-nourished cell or a cell that suffers varying degrees of trauma, the earliest form called ischemia, the lack of circulation, literally the lack of hemia, of blood. The second level, anoxia. The third level, the least remote, actually I'm giving it backwards, but let me explain. But this was a profound fact, that the third level was hypoglycemia, or low sugar. If you took away from a nerve cell the sugar, it might take 12 to 15 minutes before the cell would conk out. If you took away oxygen, it would take around 8 minutes. 5 to 8. And if you took away just the cutting down the circulation of the blood, it only took 3 before the EEG would go flat.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the cells, you would get a flat EEG in an animal with ischemia, brain ischemia. So that here you had a perfectly reversible situation. But to the uneducated eye, it looks like you got death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is profound. See,
well, yeah.
That is when I started to open my eyes to ischemia, not to the heart, where ischemia means angina pectoris, heart attack, arrhythmia, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the brain. What you get with an ischemic brain is it doesn't work very well. We're talking confusion, distraction, attention deficit, accident creation, violence, and psychosis.
Right.
In people who, when they recover from that event, may be perfectly normal.
Right.
It's the perfect crime. It's nature's perfect crime. This isn't in our medical books. It isn't in our law. And so it isn't in our marriage understanding of each other where we go crazy and say things we didn't mean.
Right. We never think of the building blocks. We never think of the essential building blocks. We never think of a root cause. We focus in on symptoms. Well, not you and I, actually, but frequently this is what happens. It's the sort of idea that if your alternator is not functioning in the car, you just change the alternator. It doesn't occur to you that the alternator not working might affect something else, you know, or that there might have been a reason why the alternator went bad in the car. It may just, you know, be age, but our bodies don't work like cars exactly.
So circulation is nutrition.
Right.
And when you just cut down the flow enough, what happens is the activity of the cell falters and it fails to produce the ultimate antioxidant, which is called a proton, H+, within the mitochondria. And so the inner workings of the cell are damaged right away, but reversible. However, you get then a free radical burst and you set up what's called a reperfusion injury. All much too complicated, but some of those in the audience who read this will understand what I'm getting at. And that is why ischemia magnifies the functional injury, the malfunction. It looks worse than it is, you see. Mm-hmm. It's one of them there things that is so hopeful if you catch it in time before much damage is done, because what you end up with is an adaptive thing. What happens is the brain cuts out, and you've got someone who's either in a fugue state or psychotic or having a seizure, but in a way it kind of protects the brain from working.
Right.
And by not working, it doesn't create as many free radicals because it's not producing enough antioxidants from these protons to defend itself. And in that case, of course, that's where megavitamins come in. A large dose of vitamin C, for example, will double the amount of antioxidants circulating in the brain. Certain herbal, that are called polyphenols,
mm-hmm.
English, bioflavonoids,
mm-hmm. plant-based,
also cross the blood-brain barrier and act as a backup system of protection. Vitamin E, likewise. Coenzyme Q, lipoic acid. These things are turning out to be finally coming into their own as therapeutic principles.
Mm-hmm.
Even DMSO, with this beleaguered wood pulp derivative, is a hydroxyl scavenger and also a calcium blocker that slows down the perfusion of the oxidative injury. So there's a lot to do. See, it's a whole new slant on medicine. If I'm talking.
Oh no, of course it is.
You triggered my buttons.
No, I was going to say, I knew that we'd have a problem with you not having anything to say. I just knew that would be a problem. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with San Francisco physician Richard Koonin, who is a founder of the Orthomolecular Society.
Yes,
Society of Orthomolecular.
We now call it Orthomolecular Health Medicine.
Health Medicine, and we'll talk.
See how sick you are,
right?
But how healthy you can be,
right? And we'll discuss at some point too about whether or not people want to join that or be involved in it and things like that. But what we've been doing is we're talking about why. The question we really answered here is why. When people say to me, among other things, why can't I just get this from my food, we've answered it both by saying that you can't because sometimes you're not absorbing properly, and you can't sometimes because if there's enough damage from either the way you've cared for yourself with your nutrition or the amount of stress that you're under, either as you were raised or later or whatever happens to you, or the environment, the no-see-ums you don't have control over, the things you don't know that you're being exposed to, these things are affecting you, and it is larger doses of vitamins, not just what you can absorb from your food, that will help to protect you and repair damage. And we've been talking about the different ways that things can get hosed up. So if you're, because the transport system is your digestion, your blood circulation, if either one of those are impaired, what Dr. Koonin has just pointed out is that, among other things, it can cause terrible problems with your heart, with your brain, etc.
But here's where the genes get into it, because I've been screening my patients for their blood flow characteristics. It's called rheology, R-H-E-O-L-O-G-Y. And the chemical factors that are involved, of course, are a whole chain of about over a dozen pro-coagulant factors built right into the blood, various proteins that make blood clot, ending up with that fibrous thing that's called fibrin, as a matter of fact. And then the blood also has enzymes or counterparts that sort of unravel the clots. And if it went that way, all of us would have been clotted up a long time ago.
Some people are clotted up, have you noticed?
Listen, the genetics of it, it seems that Mother Nature has put into some of us higher amounts of low-density lipoproteins. Some of them are called LPA. It's interesting, that sounds like minus Pauling, small a, LP, small a, but it really means lipoprotein, small a. Others may have a protein byproduct called homocysteine, which has a genetic relationship as well as environmental, one of those things, but the genes are a part of it. And a larger number have actually a sort of an LDL subfraction, I think they call it 3B, that is just currently coming into our consciousness. And each of these things has a different spin than just old cholesterol by itself or even HDL cholesterol by itself. These new factors seem to account for well over 80% to 90% of all the vascular problems. And the reason is they are procoagulant. They trigger off the defensive mechanism, because after all, coagulation of the blood was Mother Nature's way of protecting us against bleeding to death if we got injured or cut.
You've just taken us way off in a side piece, and what I want to do is just... Huh?
It's nutritional.
No. But let me just, can I just try to pull this back in so that we can get on a track where people are following us?
Oh, sure.
What you're talking about is not just the coagulation factor in the blood. You're talking about, you mentioned homocysteine and you mentioned LPA, and it went by a little fast. And since we've already gone on this side trip, what I'd like you to do is explain, you know, just very briefly what the homocysteine thing, and also what you discovered about that homocysteine levels alone, which predisposes people to heart attacks, that people can also have this lipoprotein antigen, which if they have both of these things together, takes you out real fast.
That's right.
So go ahead and see if you can give me a couple-minute quick explanation of that, so people, because that's a very exciting piece that I heard you talk about.
Well,
before.
First of all, I said these words, if nothing else, just to familiarize the audience, our friends in the audience, that these are going to be life and death words for some people in the audience. In fact, they affect everybody, because under certain conditions, even if you get tested and you get a passing grade one day, the fact of the matter is, under cases of infection, stress, or even dietary imbalance, particularly with homocysteine, excess protein, your body may produce a lot of balance, and the sign of being out of balance is that the metabolic chain of events gets blocked. And normally the essential amino acid methionine, which comes from mostly from animal protein, is used for all kinds of life-saving operations, the manufacture of enzymes, for example, the regulation of cell healing.
It
affects so many things. I could go on for an hour.
I know. I don't want you to do that because I have some other questions for you.
And, but ultimately, it's also the source of antioxidants called glutathione, which are the ultimate internal, synthesized by the body antioxidant.
Yeah. Now, when we take antioxidants, we're trying to improve the level of glutathione in our body.
Right. But ultimately, the glutathione comes from methionine. If the methionine metabolism gets blocked, it'll show up as homocysteine. Because the homocysteine is blocked, it will fail to be regenerating back into methionine. There's a second pathway, then the body has to get rid of the homocysteine. And if it's low on B6 or if it's polluted by certain toxic elements in the environment, or if it's low on zinc, and possibly also low on magnesium, and it goes down. There's quite a number of ways it can go wrong. Here again, the body can't get rid of the homocysteine. At that point, you're set up to have a lack of antioxidants, which is bad enough by itself. At the same time, you get an excess of homocysteine, which now turns into a demon and starts to attack the blood vessel walls and initiates not only damage to the blood vessels, but also activates the platelets, forming platelet clots in just about everywhere in the body where there's the least little provocation, in other words, wear and tear. So this homocysteine, we now know, even minor elevations of homocysteine, like the difference of a nanomole, you know, a billionth of a mole is in the blood, liter of blood. That nanomole, by going between 9 and 10, doubles your risk of cardiovascular event.
Now, people may have understood what you just said if they broke it down too quickly in their minds, if you eat too much protein, then you have too much homocysteine. But that's not what you're saying. What you're saying is that there are things that help you metabolize properly, and if they're deficient, then the homocysteine and your genetics.
This is a little. It accounts for about 20% of the heart attacks out there. Mm-hmm. Some say 10%, but it's probably more than we say. You know.
Well, but it's undiagnosed. I mean, there are people who have heart attacks for no reason, and they don't know why.
These are people with normal cholesterol who get a heart attack anyway. See, cholesterol is a relatively weak factor.
Absolutely.
Determining life and death things.
That's right. Well, it carries antioxidants around.
LPA, and when your LPA is over 30...
What is LPA?
That's that lipoprotein A again.
Okay, so that's another thing that people don't check for. So two things that we're talking about here that aren't checked often when people have heart problems is homocysteine levels and the presence of LPA, which
that's
is
right.
A lipoprotein antigen.
Sure. No, I guess we're not off the subject then to finish the thought, which is simply that if we check these things, we're in a position to prevent the bad things from happening. Because even though LPA is predominantly a genetic trait, it is a treatable genetic trait. These are people that need more vitamin C, and they need more lysine, and they need more herbs, and they need more help to get that methionine functioning. So they then need more B12 and folic acid.
Folic acid.
And B6. And it goes on and on. The next thing you know, hey, it sounds just like a vitamin quack, except for one thing. It's no longer quackery.
Mm-hmm.
We now know why it works. We now know why, in most instances, why you need more than the usual amount. We now know why, in some people, if you get too much wheat, too many grains, and you block your, some people get irritated gut from that, and they get a sort of a sore duodenum, they don't absorb their folic acid. They don't digest it. So now they get homocysteine problems, secondary to a food intolerance.
Yeah, food
wow.
Intolerance.
Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, you're on for, you know, on the merry-go-round.
Mm-hmm.
And you are in the nutrition movement for real. And, of course, this is what happened to me. I started out, after all, I heard my bio, I was a psychiatrist, a very happy behavior therapy, hypnosis type, body language and imagery method, body worker back in the 1950s. You know, I'm an older guy. Back in the 40 years ago, I was.
I might mention that you don't. I told you this when you said something about being an older guy when I was talking to you on the phone. I had seen you talk, and I said, "What older? What?" I figured you were close to my age, and you're in fact. No, you're closer to my parents. You're 67, and you look amazing, which means that this vitamin stuff works, you know?
Sure, I got into the vitamins 35 years ago.
Yeah, well, it works. When you look at you, you can see that. We're going to have to take a break in a second here. Did you want to finish your thought?
Well, the thought on that, so this is what we're getting at. We finally, after 30 years, I'm beginning to really know why the heck I stayed in nutrition.
Yeah.
I stayed in it because the first case where I really took it seriously and tried it, niacin for a schizophrenic,
right.
It worked in spades. I mean,
why?
I really had a cure on my hands. I couldn't believe it myself.
Right. And then, of course, you look fabulous, which...
Right.
No. Okay. All right.
Secondly, other things now...
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I gotta stop you for a second, because we need... Richard, we
okay,
need to...
I'm,
we
I'm
need
off.
To. No, go. Don't go away. Just stay there. Don't move. We're talking with Dr. Richard Koonin, who has nothing to say about vitamins and medicine. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Who is a physician in San Francisco, one of the few existing physicians who treats people with orthomolecular health medicine, which means with vitamins. We're talking on the phone with him. This is Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. We are going to take just a 30-second break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what it is that causes people to be maladaptive, what sorts of things, and then talk about a little bit about the pathways, about what different organ systems are affected, I hope. I don't know if I can rein him in enough, but I also know you want to hear him talk, so I'll do my best to let you have that. Anyway, we'll be right back with more from Richard Koonin. Hang tight.
Your molecular structure is really mean. Your cellular organization is really something choice. Electromagnetism about to make me lose my voice. Got all my circuits open, my system's reading gold. Your cellular organization, baby, stop the show.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman, and I have by phone San Francisco physician Richard Koonin, who is the founder of the Society of Orthomolecular Health Medicine, which means with vitamins and minerals and supplements and fatty acids and the science of all of that. If you miss part of today's show and you want to get a cassette copy of it, since this information is going by the speed of light, you can call my information number 24 hours a day to get information on how to do that. It's 707-773-4727, or you can go to the website, you delete www and type in members.aol.com/YOHAF, Your Own Health and Fitness. And I understand, Richard, that you are willing to give out your office number.
Well, that's fine, of course.
Okay.
I'm a working doc.
Yeah, he's a working guy. And his number in San Francisco is 415-346-2500, and I'm rather guessing that it's probably you're very busy, and it's probably difficult for you to just answer questions ad hoc, but you are available for appointments and stuff.
We try to be practical, but as you can tell, this medicine is a huge mountain to climb, no matter who you are and no matter what path you take. The conventional path is a germs and genes path. And you can see the emphasis lately is on genes, gene therapy, which is not quite here. So there's a great promise, but the docs have been slow to deliver. I think when the gene therapies get here in the next 10 or 20 years, doctors are once again going to be restored to their place at the top of the mountain. It's marvelous. Things are happening, no question about it. But what is here is the genius, the productivity of an entire century of biochemical and physiological advances. And nutrition is really, that's what it's all about.
Well, no, I think we've sold the audience on that.
No.
Okay.
The next part of it that fits into this in the path that I take involves, as a part of its guidelines, guideposts, pollution.
Yes.
And stress.
Right.
Or, shall we say, adaptation.
Okay, so to clarify stress, we're talking about pollution, which includes toxic metals, pesticides, smoke, and allergens.
Well, actually, stress includes pollution, first of all.
Yeah.
Actually, what you've got is things that build you up, which is to say nutrition, and things that tear you down, which is to say stressors.
Mm-hmm.
But in between, you've got the concept of pollution, which means germs, allergens, chemicals, pesticides, you know, more chemicals, solvents, which is a different type of chemicals, you know, as you break down that category. And these are always with us. They must be accounted for when nutrition isn't working right. But, of course, as I was saying, also so must the circulation dynamics. Now, for example, germs. You take chlamydia, you know, the sexually transmitted disease, but it's not always sexually transmitted. Also, that organism is transmissible by a sputum. From birds, also, by the way. Chlamydia is a bird-related disease, a different species of the chlamydia.
Yeah, but you're not saying that human beings are regularly...
It has an effect on circulation. Cytomegalic virus has an effect on circulation. You see, a lot of these pollutants affect circulation. That's what I'm saying.
Well, and now we're finding more and more links to these tiny little, you know, mycoplasmal infections and things like chlamydia showing up in the heart.
Exactly. And these
seeing it as a root cause.
Haven't all been worked out yet.
Yeah.
Allergy. We now know these little allergens do absorb, even food allergens, through the gut. And what happens is you get a speeding up of the heart rate. That's the old, what's it called? The pulse test.
Yes.
And what that means is that your body is recognizing the antigen as enemy, and it's, you can bet, it's also procoagulant. So food allergies get into it. You get on into these chemicals, and you'll find that a host of chemicals are procoagulant. Certain antibiotics, gosh, it's not well known, sulfas, and trimethoprim, commonly used for bladder problems, will triple in many people, not all, but will triple the level of homocysteine.
Okay.
So even the things that we do to help people are potentially toxic. We have to keep that in mind. As you see what I'm getting at.
No, of course.
Who's on this track, we shouldn't neglect, you know, I'm very interested in fluoridation. Fluoride is a tremendous peroxidizer. And it also carries with it heavy metals. It doubles the level of lead in your system just being living in a fluoridated community. This is the latest challenge to orthodoxy. So new that the word isn't even out on it yet.
Okay, let me just back up for one. Can I sit, Richard? Okay. What we did hear him say is that if you are allergic to a food and you think you might be getting a reaction, check your pulse. If your pulse is elevated, you are getting a reaction. So I didn't want that to go by because it's a practical little thing.
Before and after, if you're going more than 10 points over the baseline. So you got to get a baseline first. That's systematic. It's
one
of the practical, simple, cheap ways to find out who you are.
We like those. Okay. Yeah. We've only got a few minutes. So I want to sort of go back to, we've been talking about the absorption through the gut and then the blood circulation and how that gets strange. Let's talk a little bit about the way that the body, when it's adapting to chronic stress, affects the liver and why the liver is so important and how the liver affects the endocrine system and the hormones and everything at that point, huh?
Well, the easiest way to discuss it is to take your bad cases. Take a hepatitis case. And you find that if your hepatitis case is complicated by malnutrition, it's much worse. On the other hand, if you treat too aggressively with vitamin A, for example, which is a very delicate vitamin, the vitamin A will also peroxidize and cause exaggerated damage to the liver. So these are things that they require somebody who knows the fundamentals very well and can proceed safely. For example, I had the personal experience recently of a hepatitis. contamination. And so this young man has been carrying hepatitis C probably since transfusions 15 years ago when he was having a renal transplant. He's a double jeopardy guy. One part of him was living on a kidney transplant, and the other part of him had hepatitis C, and he was in terminal status where he was bleeding from his stomach and had lost two-thirds of his blood and was not expected to recover. We managed to stop the bleeding with calcium, literally Tums.
I hate Tums.
I know, but in his case, it was the simplest way to get his blood to clot in the stomach.
And the reason that calcium causes blood to clot is why?
It activates thrombin, which is your activator for fibrinogen to fibrin. So it makes the clots happen. It stops the bleeding.
And that's pretty important if people are taking huge amounts of calcium and they don't want their blood to
clot. Well, that's right. If you're overdosing on calcium, we should see
not the balancing
calcium generation will have an increased rate of death.
Well, and it just needs to be, again, it's balances.
Magnesium, vitamin E.
Thank you, balance with magnesium, yeah.
Balance is the whole name of the game.
I know. Okay, but the liver is your detoxification, it's the beginning of your detoxification pathway, is it not?
Well, of course, but the liver is also where the food goes from the stomach. And take protein, for example. Protein is converted into methionine. The cycle from methionine to homocysteine is very active in the liver. So if you can't reconvert the homocysteine back to methionine, you get right there a damage just from the food you just ate. That's why, as a rule with hepatitis, we're very careful not to let people overeat. We generally recommend a lower protein diet, but just find the right level where they get enough to do the job of maintaining their essentials without overloading so they aggravate the cirrhosis. And then, of course, some smart guy noticed that when people got food that had choline in them, and choline in particular, then it would then survive.
Yeah, but you're not talking about free choline, you're talking about phosphatidylcholine, right?
Well, whatever the choline it would be, like the choline in eggs even.
Right, that's phosphatidylcholine.
To giving choline, right. It worked. It didn't have to be phosphatidylcholine.
Oh, okay.
Ordinary choline worked. It was a lipotrophic agent and it prevented fatty liver. Now we know TNG, which is an offspring of choline, is the common antidote for homocysteine. It's because it's much easier to take. You can take larger doses. It doesn't give you a fishy smell. It doesn't attract water quite as readily. So in fact, I developed a drinkable product just so people who are worried about this could get enough choline that they could have access to it without taking tons of pills. I put it into a drink, and it tastes good. But, you know, I call it Ololoa. There's a little plug, but that's beside the point. What is important here is to know that we have the means to understand why these liver injuries go on. If you've got a virus there, the virus can get ahead of you because you got the inflammatory reaction from the foods and from the toxicities and other things that work in the equation of health versus disease. And so that's what the doctor is all about, is to make this work for you and know this is happening.
Okay, well, you know what I'd like to do for a second, because I know about some of this stuff and I'm getting overwhelmed. So, let me just try asking you something.
Go.
Okay. Instead of continuing on and getting more overwhelmed, can you talk a little bit about some practical things that, you know, because right now it's like I'm thinking, how do I know if my liver is okay? So can you start talking about some of the things that you're actually doing in your practice that are useful, or
sure,
what people can do on their own?
Liver, you're talking life and death.
Right, I know.
And so that's not really a do-it-yourself project. It's really a doctor-patient project. The first thing a doctor does...
So how do you know your liver's in trouble?
Well, first of all, you turn yellow at home. If you get jaundice, you know you're in trouble.
Okay.
If your urine turns dark and your stools turn white, you're in trouble.
Yeah, but that's actually hepatitis already by then, no?
Well, whether it's hepatitis, whether it's plugged up bile ducts, it isn't so simple. The textbook of medicine on liver is a big, big chapter.
Okay, so what do you do as a diagnostician when somebody comes in and they're yellow?
Early cases, and also, by the way, at home, you may find you lose your appetite, you feel tired all the time, you have nausea. If it's gallbladder related, after you eat, especially fats, you may get really nauseated or have severe pain in the right shoulder or in the abdomen. Sometimes pancreatic inflammation accompanies it, in which case you really are doubled up in pain and maybe having severe vomiting and that sort of thing. But most importantly, in the early cases where you're wondering if things are not well in your total health, but you don't know if it's your liver, and thank heavens it's early enough so that these major signs of damage don't yet exist, then the doctor will run an ordinary chemistry panel, and he'll see bilirubin might be a little high, but for sure, the alanine something transferase enzyme, ALT enzyme, is elevated. It used to be called the SGPT. They've changed the names on it, and ever since they did it, my mind has been scrambled. But the point is, it's a classic for identifying inflammation of the liver on a microscopic level. If you catch it at that stage, then you could throw in your various antioxidant and liver protective nutrients and herbs, the most vital of them being lipoic acid, a vitamin, and milk thistle, an herb. They're proven entities. They actually
you like Silymarin better than phosphatidylcholine? Because last week, Robert was really singing the praises of phosphatidylcholine.
Well, I'm certainly singing the praises of phosphatidylcholine. And there, darn it, here we are. We're talking about something, trying to make it simple, and it turns out nutrition isn't so simple.
No.
And if you tell people it is, you're actually misleading.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do is give people a healthy respect for health as something that you make a decision somewhere in your life whether it matters to you to learn about it and how to take care of yourself and
mm-hmm.
become at least a pretty good practical at-home doctor for yourself. And because sooner or later we all go through it, it becomes vital.
Okay, so some of the early tests that a regular doctor who doesn't know about nutrition might run to help you flag, let's say you're getting a regular physical and you just kind of want to know where you are and you have a blood chemistry done. You've just mentioned the importance of checking your bilirubin and your ALT. What other things do you want to look for? I guess with kidney, you want to check BUN and creatinine?
Yes, for sure. And kidney is a very interesting organ. It's not well known that creatine, one stage of the synthesis depends on kidney function. And you don't know you have lost kidney function, by the way, until you've lost about 50% of your kidney function, which means you've lost the equivalent of one kidney. Before it'll show up as an increase, let's say, in the visible, measurable sign called creatinine, which is the excretion product of the creatine, which has got to get out through the kidneys. And if the kidneys fail, then it'll build up in your blood, and the doctor sees that and says, gosh, the kidneys aren't working well. But we can also do an amino acid profile, and there you'll see 1 and 3 methylhistidine as markers for kidney problems. In fact, I just had that one in a consultation with a gal today who was suddenly running a high potassium. And she was running a high potassium because she'd injured her knee and had a hematoma. As the hematoma was breaking down, it was releasing potassium. And the potassium couldn't get out the kidneys because her kidneys weren't working very well. They're about probably 40% of normal. And so she was getting a high serum potassium. And she's from New York, so I was talking to her long distance, and her doctors in New York were puzzled. Why was she having a high potassium? Well, she wasn't taking a potassium supplement. So here was trauma showing up as a high potassium coming from a hematoma. Probably a cup of blood in her leg from the bleeding that had gone on there. So, how do you find these things?
Going back to the traditional tests.
It takes a lot of knowledge.
No, I know. I know. I'm not saying that everybody can do this on their own. I'm just saying that because everybody who's listening to this show right now is not going to be able to get an appointment with you if they all call at the same time, although they might.
Well, but they might become aware that health medicine
Yeah, but I'm trying to give them some practical information initially. So going back to BUN and creatinine. Sometimes you will see a high BUN and a normal creatinine. And I've heard doctors say, well, we don't worry about this unless they're both high.
Well, but you see, that's the pathological approach to medicine. That's orthodox medicine that is based on autopsy studies. The orthomolecular health medicine is physiological medicine. And we're looking earlier at the situation. And so then we say, gosh, the BUN is rising, which means you're not getting your protein byproducts out to the kidneys very well.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, that may imply that you're eating too much protein.
Okay.
Thirdly, it implies that you do have some impairment of renal excretion, kidney excretion. And then why is the creatinine low? Possibly because you're not forming creatinine very well, which is another sign of kidney damage.
But if one is high and the other is normal?
That's what I'm telling you.
Okay.
If the BUN is high and the creatinine is normal or low,
mm-hmm.
you've got kidney damage.
Mm-hmm.
But it's early kidney damage, and it's not in the textbooks.
Okay.
Because in order to form creatine, arginine and glycine have to mix it up in the kidneys, and they transform into a thing called glucosamine, which, pardon me for my French, but that's the intermediate product that then goes to the liver and is now converted into creatine, which is then the source of phosphorus in the muscle. And so when your kidneys are bad, your muscles are weak.
Could you also have an abnormal BUN or any of these if you're taking a lot of amino acids as a therapeutic thing?
You can overdose, you bet.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. They turn into urea.
Well, I mean, things like glutamine, I know, can
urea
turn...
Urea is what's called BUN.
Blood. Well, the reason I'm asking about this is because I know that glutamine, which is wonderful for repairing the mucosa of the gut and curbs sensitivities and cravings for sugar because it hooks into the receptors in your brain for sugar. So people, I often will recommend, and I've heard other people recommend, fairly high doses of glutamine to sort of calm that whole pathway down. If you're taking a lot of glutamine, it does produce a fair amount of nitrogen, does it not?
Well, that's right. So
you want to look at your amino acid intake, too.
Amino acids, like anything else in life, any food, or stuff we take into our body can overload us, can cause symptoms. Even arginine, an essential amino acid, is considered pretty harmless, causes symptoms in some people.
Like?
Well, headache, flushing, and there is a thing called hyperarginemia, an arginosuccinic acidemia.
Easy for you to say.
Of course, that some people have. I'm just trying to say there are some genetic variants where some people will have trouble where most everybody else won't.
Well, and people are taking arginine now for other reasons,
yeah,
you know, like smart stuff to
improve
sexual function.
Big doses, 20-gram doses.
Yeah, big doses.
I'm trying to mention, don't take anything for granted.
Right.
You can have trouble, and if you're not feeling right, you've got to stop it.
Okay, now amino acid profiles are traditionally rather expensive to get done, but you've discovered that you've got ways.
Well, the prices are coming down.
Is it?
Sure, it's like so many things. As competition goes up, as more labs do it, instead of charging $300 to $400, they're down to $125. And even less than that for an essentials only, you can get it under $100. That's quite, for most people who really want to get an understanding of their body physiology and body chemistry, it's a useful...
What is it again, Richard? What's the name of it?
Quantitative Amino Acid Panel.
That's the first one. What was the second one you mentioned?
Essential amino acids only.
Oh.
Partial reading.
Oh, okay.
Because it takes less time on the machine, it doesn't cost as much.
What other diagnostic...
Case today, what you can see from the amino acids, one of the best things from it, you can see whether you're malabsorbing.
Of course.
Or you could do a urine test for organic acid, and you can see if you got yeast in your belly. You don't have to measure the yeast. You measure the byproducts. So there's a lot of things happening in functional diagnosis that are very appealing.
Why don't you mention some other ones?
Well, of course, the fundamental stuff is you measure vitamins and minerals. It used to be we measured them one at a time, $50 to $100 a piece. Now we maybe measure 20 at a time, get the whole profile, because every one of them, you know, can be fixed. If you find a vitamin that's off, you can repair it. And the price on these is now down in the $200 to $250 range, depending on how far you go with it, which is pretty reasonable compared to if you took 20 vitamins and multiplied by even 50, you got $1,000. In other words, the price break has been tripled.
So if people are in the early stages of trying to sort this out and they don't have any remarkable symptoms, but they're, you know, a little overwhelmed, they're trying to, and they're working with a traditional doc initially, you know, they're on one of these insurance plans that covers, you know, a doctor for the thing, and it's kind of, you know, and they'll do like physicals. We've discussed the idea of doing a blood chemistry, and we've highlighted kidney function and liver function. Is there anything else on those traditional tests, albeit not very effective tests,
sure,
that are useful?
Let me give you my favorite subject, which was mineral analysis, because that's where I really got turned on to the scientific side of this. Way back in 1970, I was the first doc in the area doing hair analysis, and I had the good fortune to have the head of toxicology and industrial medicine at UCSF, Dr. Hine, as my mentor. And so we did hair analysis under the best of circumstances. We even ran 300 people on fluoride and found on a 3% toxic level. If you took 3% and figured it through America, you're talking about millions of people toxic on fluoride. And that was back then, before the fluoridation was as widespread. But anyway, we did mineral analysis, and when it came time for my one-year-old baby to be checked, it turned out at age one, he had lead poisoning.
Mm.
So I always encourage people, the only way to know your heavy metals in a practical way that doesn't require needles, doesn't require great expense, is to do a hair analysis.
Yeah, and it's inexpensive.
Yeah.
Okay, and in the last few minutes before we have to go, heavy metals are a big issue because people who paint for a living, I mean, a lot of people get metals in various ways. And there's this thing about, well, you know, when you, there are certain books that say, oh, you have to do this intravenous chelation with ET, and then they say this damages your kidneys and that. What
well,
are your...
My little boy with eggs.
Eggs?
Sure.
Because it affects the liver, you mean?
Well, eggs, and I gave him zinc and iron supplements. He did fine. He was at the top of his class, absolutely.
Well, and I think, isn't vitamin C one of the most powerful chelators to get rid of heavy metals?
You got it.
So you're saying to get rid of heavy metals, you eat eggs?
Well, sure.
You take vitamin C
sure.
and zinc.
For children, the zinc and the iron.
Yeah. What about adults?
So. And of course, you take your, you know, you have a generous supplemental program.
Yeah.
Same for adults. Carl Pfeiffer, the very famous orthopedist.
Yes, wish he was still alive.
He did a study of workers in a factory where they're exposed to lead. That was a battery plant. And he, when he treated them with his vitamin C mega doses in the, you know, 3 to 10 grams, and zinc in the 50 to 100 milligrams, and iron, roughly 20 milligrams, not sensational doses, but enough to be sure you were getting your iron. The effects of the lead, and of course, plenty of calcium to block the lead uptake, and plenty of magnesium to attenuate its absorption into the cells, and some manganese. I mean, it's pretty complete. You've got to have all the nutrients to fight the effects of a mineral poison like lead. But he had terrific results. The levels, instead of going up, started to go down, even though they were so exposed. It was an incredible demonstration. That was without doing the EDTA.
You aren't worried about iron supplements?
Oh, I'm very worried about
yeah,
it because
that's
it
overloads a metal.
The entire, but short term, and then you measure it. That's the whole point of having a doc, is to have somebody there to watch over and do it right.
What about using liver capsules instead of using iron supplements?
Well, you're getting minuscule amounts of iron, but they're marvelous. It's the best form of iron called heme iron.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
In that case, why not eat meat?
Well, that's what I tell people, but some people get mad and call me up and scream. Most people appreciate me saying that, but, you know.
But different needs for different people.
Yeah, no, people have to make decisions
sure.
For themselves. I always say that, but I also say that it's always important to have the information, the scientific information, so you're making an informed decision about what you're doing, and it's not just an emotional decision. It's fine.
Exactly.
But, of course, we're talking organic meat, the closest we can come to organic meat, whatever you can get that's closest, not regular commercial meat. I'm
sure.
Not.
Well, sure, with Robert Crayon, you talked about carnitine.
Yeah, we did.
The source is,
yeah.
Is meat, and otherwise you run into people, really, especially if there are medications, including aspirin, which a lot of people are taking every day, which interferes with carnitine and thus sets people up for fatigue and limp muscles and inability to sit through a concert without getting a stiff neck and that sort of thing. So it all interacts. There's so much to know. I wish I could say it all in an hour.
Well, no, you know, can you come back? Can we get you back?
This is fun.
Oh, yeah, I like it, too.
And it's
well, we could do a series of these, and eventually there'd be a lot of information out there. We're just about running out of time. Let me give out your office number again in case people want to come in and have some of these diagnostic tests done with you. Dr. Richard Kunin, K-U-N-I-N. He's on Pacific Avenue still, San Francisco?
That's right.
And it's 415-346-2500, 415-346-2500. He's also published a couple of books, but I don't think they're still out.
Well,
are they?
They're out there. Actually, they're Best Buy. Go to the used bookstores, and you get Mega Nutrition by Richard Kunin. It sounds like an onion with a K. And so it's an orthomolecular name, even. And they're probably down in the $1 range at this point. You can't get a better buy than that.
But it's not in print anymore.
Well, I have the Listen to Your Body Diet written up there in Mega Nutrition for Women. I still have some copies of that.
But it's not available through regular bookstores.
So, to call my office. The Listen to Your Body Diet remains, I think, one of the best experiences I've had with my patients all over these 35 years.
Again, but it's not available through regular bookstores.
Well, it's in the used book section of fine.
Because they're going to call me and ask me how
sure,
to get a copy of it.
They
should call you.
Sure, if they can't find it in the used book section for a dollar, they can get it from me for probably $6. How's that sound?
Well, it sounds great. Richard Kunin, you've been a delight. What a wonderful interview. Thank you so much for taking the time out from your practice.
Thank you, my dear.
I'll be in touch. We'll get another scheduled time.
Bye.
Bye. Richard Kunin again from San Francisco, 415-346-2500. If you missed parts of today's show or if it went by so fast that you want to listen to it on tape, you can get taped copies of the show and information on how to order that by calling 707-773-4727, 773-4727 in the 707 area code. If you want a list of other available shows, you can either go to the Internet, delete www, and type in members.aol.com/YOHAF, Or you can send me a self-addressed business-sized envelope with two stamps to P.O. Box 2714, Petaluma, California, 94953. Next week, I'll be interviewing Stanislav Brzezinski, developer of the breakthrough anti-neoplastin cancer therapy. He's just had a major breakthrough with an FDA study using his therapy to treat brain cancer, and it showed a remarkable success rate. So I'm Lena Berman, and as always, this has been your Health and Fitness, produced live in the studios of listener-sponsored Free Speech Radio. May it live forever, KPFA, FM, Berkeley, California. See you next week.